Welcome to the Gamers Inn. Come on in, pull up a chair next to the fire. It looks like you've had a long journey. I'm your host, Jocelyn, and joining me, as always, is my co-host, Ryan. Hello, Ryan.
Hello.
How are you this fine evening?
I'm good. I just realized I'm looking at my webcam here, and it looks if you can see like a preview to the left, that is my life, which is basically boxes and more boxes. I don't know how all these boxes got in here because they're not filled with my stuff. I'm pretty sure.
Right.
They're all...
So you're kind of in the middle of a move right now, right?
Yeah. So we're in our current house, but we also have. We're here temporarily renting it, and then we have the new house, which is currently being renovated. And I'm kind of excited because, like, I get to basically, I went at lunch to check it out. And I'm renovating the office, and we're going to turn it into like a recording studio. / Ryan gets to actually have speakers and play video games as opposed to wearing headphones. So it's nice. But right now, it kind of looks like a barren room. There's nothing on the walls. There's nothing on the floor. And I'm really excited though because I'm actually going to be able to set up. What is probably going to be my office for quite a while. I've already told Ashley we're not walking into this house, and the first words out of your mouth is like, we're probably going to move here out of here eventually. And I'm like, no, let me enjoy it. So I'm excited that, but
I love how it's like you're just starting to look at the new place, and she's like thinking of the next place. It's like, Darren, Ashley, no, this is the house. This is the thing.
I mean, but you've been in my current place, and it is pretty. Small in terms of
this is the current one you're talking about. I thought you meant the new one you just bought.
No.
She was saying
it's huge, it's bigger and it's by no means huge, but it is bigger. I'm gonna have my rec room where I get to buy my new TV, and you know, I'm looking at 4K and all that jazz and
fancy.
I don't know, like, I don't think I'm gonna go buy a 4K console, but I feel like if I'm going to buy a new TV, I should future-proof, right? Like,
you should. You should.
I don't know. I mean, if people have opinions on 4K, like, I don't think we've ever even talked about that on the show. But again, like, I guess I could watch like Netflix in 4K. That's about it.
Yeah, there's not a whole ton of actual like 4K content right this second. It's kind of like up and coming. But the thing that worries me is that 4K is going to be like the next like 720, where 720 came out and everyone was like, ooh, HD. And then within like a couple of years, it was like, oh, actually 1080 is going to be the format that we're going to do it in. So yeah. I'm worried that there's going to be like, I don't know, what the next thing be 8K? Yeah, so then, you know, everyone's like, oh, well, we could do 4K, but what if we just jump to 8 and just, you know, then all of your 4K stuff is like now what your 720 TVs and things were when 1080 came out, and we've had 1080 forever now, right? So
we have.
I just don't know if 4K is going to be what everyone's going to kind of settle on. But if you are thinking of getting a 4K console, then, I mean, obviously you should take advantage of that with a 4K TV. I don't know, man.
I really don't know either. I think it's just...
We don't have a 4K TV.
Well, no. I have a friend who just bought a 4K TV, and he has just a PlayStation 4, and he's like, he swears up and down that it makes it look better. And I was like, I don't know, man. But I checked it out, and we were actually playing Battlefield 4, and I have a console version of Battlefield 4 that I play on my 1080p screen. And yeah, you do notice a difference because like the colors are crisper. I mean, it's not technically 4K, but there's an upscale there. But I mean, I don't know. I think these days you can go into a store and you can buy a 1080p television for around the same price as a 4K television. Like 4K televisions have sort of, you know, leveled out. Now, mind you, you can go like top level spend like $12,000 on a 4K television, but I'm not doing that. Like, I am
ridiculous.
I am buying just a standard TV. I want to, you know, I want to make it get a bit bigger, you know, just to kind of like, you know, it's an upgrade, right? So, but I haven't decided yet. Like, we went into Best Buy because we were looking at furniture, and we go into the store, and I'm with Ashley Caden, who's been a little fussy lately. I think he's got like 3 new teeth, so that's fun. And then my parents, and we're sitting in the TVs, and I'm like, oh God. I don't know what I want. And the last time I bought a TV, I actually had Matt with me, and he helped me pick it out. So, like, if I'm going to ask Matt if he can come to Peterborough and just help me buy a TV, because that's the way I did it last time. But we ended up walking out, and I'm like, I don't want to talk to anybody. I don't know what I want, so I need to leave. started to have a, like, I need an adult. But
oh my god, that's hilarious.
Yeah,
bought a house, has a kid, can't buy his own TV.
I'm not good at it. There's so many options. Have you ever gone to look at TVs? Like, you look at the Black Friday sales and the Boxing Day sales, it's like,
I just buy the cheapest one. Yeah. Like, as long as I recognize the name and it's cheap, I'm like, done.
I guess. I mean, I don't want to buy the cheapest, but I certainly don't want to buy something that is like 4K HDR Ultra UHD Android Smart TV. It's $10,000 more. It's like, I don't know what that means. What am I buying here? The name, or am I buying like the ability to Chromecast to it? I don't know. Is that the general term for Chromecast?
Oh man.
I don't know. This is why I'm waiting. I'm like, you know what? I missed the Boxing Day sales. I'm going to wait for Super Bowl and then we'll see how I'm feeling then.
I see.
But I might just stick with 1080p. I don't know. 1080p is pretty cool.
So on this episode of Ryan Does TVs.
No. Now tune in February. January is book solid, all right? We're not going to do TVs in January.
And what's really funny is that the games that we played this week, none of them are console. None of them have anything to do with TVs at all. Nope. Ryan played a little bit of The Walking Dead and New Frontier. So is this another Telltale?
Yeah, it is. Yeah. For those who are listening on the audio.
I thought you were done with this, Ryan. No, I thought we had talked about this. Do I have to have an intervention?
I will say this. I am contractually obligated by the wonderful patrons of Zombies Ate My Podcast to play Walking Dead video games. I kind of have to. Like, because of them, I'm addicted, and I blame them, but really it's my own doing. I'm addicted to the iOS Walking Dead game that's completely terrible free-to-play bull. But we're not going to talk about that. We're talking about The Walking Dead: A New Frontier, which is technically season 3 of Telltale's The Walking Dead, but they've kind of dropped the season for some reason. I don't know why.
Is it still episodic?
It's still episodic, which is interesting because they, yeah. I've come around on that. I do think it's kind of lame and dumb, and I think it makes you anticipate the episodes more if you're into it, and then that allows you to be more disappointed when you eventually do play it. The cool thing about the return of The Walking Dead: A New Frontier is you actually get two episodes at the very beginning, which, I mean,
didn't they do that before?
I don't know.
It wasn't for Game of Thrones.
I think it was Minecraft. They dropped them pretty close together.
Yeah. I feel like there was another time where we were playing a Telltale title and both of the episodes, like 1 and 2, were kind of available right when we were playing. Might have been because we were a little bit behind the times, but I don't think so. I feel like there was another one that had, like, there was like episode 1 is free and then here's 1 and 2 and you can buy 2 sort of thing. Like, there was like 1 free episode and 1 paid episode. I might be totally on crack. I don't know, but
well, Telltale will normally release after they have a few episodes out, they will make the first one free. The only other Telltale game, like, if you're recalling playing it, it might have been The Wolf Among Us. Because that's really the only one that really captured us. And I think it was The Wolf Among Us, because we played the first episode, and then the second episode was, like, right around the corner. We were actually talking about the trailer for the next episode, I think, that launched maybe a couple weeks after. And that's the thing with these Telltale games is it's not just me, it's not just you, it's the entire, like, so for those who want a spoilerific review, we're going to be talking about it on Zombies Ate My Podcast. You can check that out and find out what we thought about the story and spoiler-filled stuff. But in terms of the Telltale games, like, even the guys there, Bob and Lou, they're not as into it as we used to be. Like, I think the original Walking Dead season was really well done and kind of a one-and-done, kind of really, really good hit, nail on the head kind of thing. And then season 2 felt like a continuation of that, but almost to the point where they didn't do anything different with it. It was all the same kind of like, oh, but it's going to end. Here's a bad guy. Now you take a hammer to his face. Boopity-boo. Mash the X button. Then hit A real quick. And what they do with The New Frontier is I think they learned a little bit from that, and they kind of swap out the main character. So Clementine is in it. Because you've played The Walking Dead, like, at least season 1.
Yeah, I played the season 1, and then I think the first episode of season 2. I remember a scene with, like, Clementine in a shed.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And I can't remember if that was episode 1 or episode 2, but it was definitely season 2.
Right.
Because I think pretty much everybody dies and she's on her own at the end of season one, right? So then...
yeah, basically.
Season two, where it picks up, like, you're like, you look around a campsite and then you find a house and then you're in a shed because they're trying to decide if they should let you in or something like that. So they put you in the shed and then you have to, like, fight off a zombie. That's pretty much as far as I got. So it might have been, like, the end of episode one, but I didn't play a lot of it because I don't enjoy the Telltale games at all, really. Episode one of Walking Dead was kind of cool because it was like, even though the graphics were total shit, and we've talked about that before, at least the story was cool and like the kind of point and click adventure stuff was like not necessarily new to me, but it was the first experience like that I'd had in a long time. So it was very much like a little bit exciting, and plus I loved The Walking Dead at that point in time, so I was very much still into that whole universe because that was what, 4 years ago or something?
Yeah,
when the very first
the peak of
season
it.
Came out. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And
so, but I didn't I definitely didn't finish the second one, season two, I guess.
And I don't really blame you for that, because again, like, it was just sort of a let's keep telling this story kind of thing.
Yeah, and you never seemed very excited about it when you were talking about it. So if you're not excited about it, and you're like Ryan and you like love everything, so I'm like, if Ryan's not speaking that highly of it, it's probably not the kind of thing that I'm going to enjoy. So I stayed away from it.
Yeah, and I mean, again, like, I joke, you know, that I'm obligated to play it, but I mean, I do still enjoy playing Telltale games, and I have fallen away from them a little bit over the past, like, I didn't even pick up, I think, the last two, and we, like, dropped Game of Thrones.
Oh,
like,
yeah.
Like a hot pile of garbage.
So fast. I think, yeah, we were supposed to do all five episodes of Game of Thrones, and then we got to the end of the second one, and we were just like, no.
It's one of those rare moments where we both agree that, like, we don't want to keep playing this game. Like, sometimes it's one or the other where, you know, I'm hanging on or you're hanging on, but in that moment it was like, I don't know. I don't think so. Like, let's just watch Game of Thrones and be done with it. And I think with A New Frontier, like, if you enjoyed The Walking Dead season one, you will enjoy this season, because they kind of throw out the main characters, but they bring back Clementine, and it's 4 years in the future, so Clementine isn't this little girl anymore. She's actually a hardened I'd say
survivor
teenager. Yeah, she's a teenager, she's a survivor, she's gone through the ringer, and you see that through these flashbacks. So in the first episode, I only played the first episode, but in the first episode, there's a flashback where you get to see what happened to Clementine shortly after the end of season two. And the way these games work, there's these choices and branching paths. And normally, at the end of a Telltale game, it comes back to this point, this conclusion.
Yeah.
But at the end of season two, that conclusion, which was actually two very distinct endings, where you walked away with one character or the other, and that character that you chose not to walk away with had passed away, and they were very different, not only the characters but also the directions in which your character was going. So moving the story forward 4 years allows Telltale to, and it's similar to our discussion about Mass Effect, moving the story forward allows you to kind of hint and tease at what happened at the after season two, but without going into all these details that would really make making the game impossible.
I find I'm kind of more and more interested in this kind of method of storytelling of, you know, skipping a big chunk in the middle, because it's like, when you skip the big chunk in the middle, you really want to know what happened. But there's so many TV shows that kind of will actually, and not just TV shows, but video games and whatever, but they'll actually tell the whole story all the way through with that chunk in the middle. Mm-hmm. And at times it gets really boring and tedious and everything else. And some stories are better told in just little flashbacks where you can say, like, here are the high points of this point in time. And Grey's Anatomy, which is really, it's funny that I say this because Grey's Anatomy does it, and I hate it when they do it, but they do like one episode usually that goes from like covers the time from like Thanksgiving through Christmas and into January, so there's like 6 weeks in one episode. But I'm kind of coming around to it more and more with, like, when there's really big chunks of time where you can have significant events, like, worthy of noting and worthy of a flashback. Mm-hmm. And I find that that's a really interesting storytelling device, because if we had had to play games like Walking Dead season 3, 4, 5, 6, like, and plus then you're also putting it out over like 2014 through like 2020 before we would even get to this point, I think a lot of people probably would have fallen off the franchise. But by just kind of skipping that time until still giving us those little bits of story that you kind of need, they're able to explore the same character that we love, but in a different way, because now she's older and she's been through so much and all the rest of it. So it's like the best of both worlds, I guess. Like, we don't have to wait, but we're not missing out on the in-between story. So I'm coming around on that kind of method of storytelling.
It's a great way to just tell the cliff notes. And when you tell like a cliff notes, you're telling the best parts of the story as opposed to saying, well, today Clementine just like killed a zombie and chose between saving column A and column B.
And had to walk from town one to town two.
Exactly. And in this game, the flashback lasts, episode one flashback lasts about 20 minutes. And it's the flashback scene that you... not really play, but more just watch. So that the flashbacks are very non-interactive.
Very passive.
Yeah, you choose a couple dialogue options, but they don't really change the outcome. So, but that's because it's already happened, right?
Yeah.
So you can kind of give them a pass, but I'm sure if you want to be more critical, you can kind of say, well, this would have been an interesting wrinkle to kind of affect the future of the character by choosing her past, but might get a little
wonky. Well, and it might be, because from the sounds of it, if you've had just the one flashback so far, there's probably going to be different flashbacks, like, as you move through the episodes, and those might have more of an impact. It might be because they're kind of like, it's very much like previously on The Walking Dead.
Yeah.
So, you know, that might be why you can't influence that specific flashback very much, but it might be different going forward and multiple episodes in New Frontier.
Yeah, the flashback was more or less a way to wrap up the conclusion of season two and where your character went from there. And I actually looked up the other, because it's two completely different scenes depending on what you chose, because they were very different endings. And I looked up the other flashback, and yeah, it picks up shortly after that conclusion of season two and tells the story of what happened next for Clementine. And like you said, a scene that probably could have been ripped right out of Walking Dead season three, but instead they chose to incorporate it as a flashback into what could possibly have been season six of the game. And the other cool part about it is it seems like they've moved it ahead to pretty much where the timeline is in the comics right now.
Okay.
And this is a comic property that's not based on the TV show. And it looks, based on some thumbnails, we're going to be getting some characters from the TV show, which was missing in season two. They did not have any characters show up from the comics.
You did see Glenn, wasn't it, in season one?
Yeah, and that
you run into him at the garage or the gas station or something.
Yeah, and I think you do run into Glenn. He's like pretty heavy in the first season or first episode, because his character actually lived or had friends in Macon, Georgia, and that's where the game first took place. But and I think there was another comic book character, Lydia. Either it was a shared character name by coincidence, or it was the same character. I'm not as into the comics as a lot of folks, but it might have been Lydia from the Governor era. I've read.
Oh, okay, yeah.
Yeah, so in this one, it looks like we might have Jesus pop up, because he's clearly in the thumbnail for episode three.
Might have what?
Jesus.
Okay. That's what I thought you said, but then I was like, wait a minute.
Yeah, so there is a character, you know, Jesus, you've watched the show, right? He's in the show.
Yeah.
Okay.
I feel it. Was he only in like one or two episodes or something? Because I have not watched any of this season outside of the premiere. The premiere turned me off of the show completely. So
right. So Jesus, his actual name is Paul Monroe, because he's got the long hair and the weird beard, and they call him Jesus. But he shows up in season five pretty sporadically, and then in season six, it's still that's something about the show that if you've kept watching it, you'll notice that they'll introduce these great characters, and then just like, we ain't gonna talk about these guys anymore. And I mean, if you know where the story's going, you know they're coming back. But it is kind of frustrating to be introduced to these really cool characters and then push them to the side for characters we've been watching for years.
Yeah, they did that with Morgan, I think. Mm-hmm. He's the guy that we meet in literally episode one, right? And then he comes back like two seasons later, and then he comes back two seasons later again after that. And he was a great character. Anyways, we're getting way off track because
Sorry.
We're currently talking about Walking Dead, the TV show, which is not what this show is about.
No, we spent more
time talking about TV shows than video games.
That comes later, but...
But,
Yeah.
Overall, Walking Dead, New Frontier, in terms of Telltale Games, yay or nay?
It's a yay, because honestly, it does not change the graphical like problems. It's still got the weird lip syncing, but the game does appear to run a lot better than previous games. I do not know how it operates on the consoles. I know Telltale has some sketchy business on the consoles, but this is their first... this is one of the first titles that they're dropping previous generation versions. So it's PS4, Xbox One, and PC. I'm playing on PC, and I would probably have to say that if you want to play this and you want to enjoy the Telltale formula, you're probably best to play on PC because it has the least amount of issues, or at least on my PC. So it's worth checking out, I think.
Fair enough. The other thing that we actually, it's been out for a while now, but with our 250th episode and our Game of the Year episode, we haven't really talked about it, and that is Super Mario Run. So this is a title that came out on mobile from Nintendo. Is it iOS only, or is it Android as well? I think it's iOS only.
Currently iOS only. It will be out on Android in January, so this month at some point.
Fair enough. And so basically it's a side-scrolling runner platformer, I guess. Is that I guess that's kind of the best way I can think to describe it. But basically, we saw it at, I think, E3, and the whole idea is basically you like hold your phone and like tap with one finger to make Mario do stuff. And I don't know about you, Ryan, but I am freaking terrible. Actually, I do know about you because I can't ever even beat your scores. I am terrible at this game, like really actually terribly, horribly bad. But that being said, I still enjoy it. I find it's really difficult to wrap your head around because it looks like any other Mario game you've ever played.
Mm-hmm.
But it's like where when you can't control your forward motion, I find that's when I'm having problems, like, wrapping my head around. Like, I keep trying to, like, tap to go back and stuff and, like, you know, turn around or slow down or, you know, like, back up a bit to get a good run at a jump and all this kind of stuff. And you can't do that because it's controlling your forward motion. So there are things you can do, like wall jumps that send you back in the opposite direction, but you're always, like, trying to run towards the right-hand side of the screen.
Yeah.
So I found that a little bit frustrating.
it can get cumbersome, but I think, and honestly, I think because I've gotten so much into Super Mario Run, I feel like I'm going to have a real problem once a normal side-scrolling Mario game comes out, because I'm going to be like, what's this control stick action? I don't want to be... No, I'm kidding, obviously.
You mean
like,
this game doesn't run for me? What is going on?
Lame. 2 stars. No, I mean, I've been able to get into it. It's been a while since I played a side-scrolling Mario game, and the auto-running takes some time to get used to, and I think the best way to sort of like wrap your head around it is to just get like start just don't even worry about Toad Rally, because I think Toad Rally requires, which is a separate mode from the actual world, Toad Rally requires you to do a bunch of like tricks and moves and mm-hmm. just be more have more finesse, as opposed to just getting through the levels, which I think was the most fun I had with this game, was just going through the worlds, just doing those. Like, you can be pretty casual and just jump and run, and you're going to fall into some pits, but it's pretty forgiving and if you're just mm-hmm. trying to get through it.
That's true. I have found that I can usually on my, you know, second or third at the most try, I can get through the level. But in terms of actually getting like all the coins, because there are 5 coins of a certain color in each level. And once you collect the first color, which is kind of this light pinky purple color, then there will be 5 new coins in different locations that are harder to reach. And those 5 coins show up. And then when you get all 5 of those coins, then another 5 coins show up. So it's like the level itself stays the same, but you can increase the difficulty by having to do fancy tricks to get these other coins. So it's interesting in that way that they've kind of given you multiple difficulty levels, but they're never required.
Right.
So I thought that was kind of a really cool thing that they included, a feature of the game. But I know what you're talking about. So there's the two different modes. There's the world modes, which has three levels and then like a boss level. And I think there's six of those, right? So there's 24 levels altogether.
Yeah.
But then there's Toad Rally, which is like you challenge other players and you can't actually see, like, you see their coin total, but you don't, that's not really an indicator of skill or anything, because if I've only done rally once or twice, I might have 60 coins and someone else might be really, really bad, but have 400 coins because they've just brute forced it. So unfortunately it's not really a skill level thing, but you can challenge these people and then you kind of like race their ghost and you go through the level and you have to do like the more fancy tricks and things that you do and the more coins that you collect, whoever has the most at the end ends up winning the level, and then you get these bonus coins that you use to essentially like upgrade your little kingdom, your toad kingdom.
You earn toads and they kind of like at the end they tally how many toads gave you thumbs up, and then you get the balance of the toads, and if you lose you lose a certain amount of toads that you anteed up, and you don't get to choose what you anteed up. It's kind of random. And I feel like you're right, it's not it's not evidence of skill when you have a large Toad Rally, but you're right, like it's definitely like either a grind or you know that person who's played enough Toad Rally to kind of understand the best way to. And I've been playing a lot, like, because it's turned into my, okay, I have 5 seconds, I'm gonna play Super Mario Run, do a couple Toad Rallies, perfect. And you do realize that the people with the, like the 5,000 toads in their kingdom have got it down, and I've done enough of the Toad Rally to kind of understand, like, okay, I'm really good at doing tricks on the cannon level, because you can basically just, you know, skip across all the cannons that are flying around, and you get really good at it. And I think that's where I sort of hit a wall with this game. And I know the game's only been out for a month, but I'm wondering, okay, Nintendo's been sporadically adding like stuff that you can buy for your kingdom, which is the third pillar of the game, where you're building the Mushroom Kingdom and like placing buildings, and most of the buildings are decorative. Some of them are like you click on them and they burst coins out, or Toad Rally tickets. But I'm hoping they add more. I know there aren't more locales that they can add with the sort of the palette that they've chosen in the new Super Mario Brothers. But I'm hoping they at least add more variations on levels, because starting to get into Toad Rally a lot, you're playing a lot of those levels a lot. They're randomly generated, but not to the point where, ooh, I've done this one before kind of thing.
Yeah,
it's still fun, but you know you're playing the same thing over and over again, and It gets a little dry after you've played it a lot.
Well, and so that was going to be my next point, because like I think I've done all but the last row of levels, and I'm still not bored with it, and I haven't been doing. Excuse me. I'm still kind of sick, guys. Ryan's not boring me. I'm just
no, it's fine.
I'm just exhausted. But yeah, so I've done all but the last row of levels, and I've been doing some Toad Rally and stuff, and I wouldn't say I'm sick of it. If anything, I'm sick of myself being so bad at it, but I'm not sick of the game itself. I think the game itself is really cool, and I love the idea of having a Mario title on my phone. Yeah. I just kind of wish that it was a normal platformer that I could just hold my phone sideways and then like have like an A and B or something, or like a, if I push with my left thumb, I go forward, and if I tap with my right thumb, I jump or something. Like, really simple controls. But, like, that's what I want out of a Mario title, because I'm just so bad. Even if I could turn Mario Run sideways so that it was landscape, because I feel like I don't have enough notice of what I'm going to have to do. So that's why I'm so bad. That's what I'm going to blame it on anyways. That's why I'm so bad.
I certainly feel that. Like, if they gave you more horizontal
like
view, so you can see what's coming, and occasionally you will fall into pits and not even at the point of dying. If you're going for coins, if you're doing coin runs and trying to collect, so you can collect either pink, then purple, then black coins, and
I didn't even know what the last color was, because I've only gotten all of the pinky colored coins off the first level, and then they went like darker, so I had no idea what the third color of coin was.
It's black, and they're hard to find, and some of them are not only hard to get, but just they are secretive, they're hidden in blocks that you have to hit. And I know people who have cleared all the coins, but that's like the replay value is in the coin finding, the coin hunting. Mm-hmm. But in terms of Nintendo's first game, and I mean, Miitomo was their first app, but this is their first game on mobile platforms. I think solid entry, as opposed to a lot of the other companies that come from the console and like, I'm going to make a match 3 Ratchet and Clank. Whoop-a-doo. And it's like, it's fun for a minute. It's free to play, but like, it's not a game. It's a marketing ploy. And this is a marketing ploy as well, but it's fun.
But it's still a game in and of itself, which I think is the important part. And the other important part that we should mention is that it is free, but there's the asterisk after that is it's free for, I think the first world is free.
Not even the first world, like the first three levels, but not the castle.
Oh, but not the castle.
Which is kind of a bummer. I'll admit.
But I mean, I also think that you can tell if you're going to enjoy the game based on the first three levels, because that's what the whole game is. I mean, they're a little bit more complicated. They've got different backgrounds and some different mechanics and stuff. But the basic game is the first three levels. I think there's the normal kind of Mario pipes type. Mm-hmm. World one level. There's one that has like the like mushroom things that you have to jump, so there's like one of those kind of up in the air but not really ones, and so you can get a really good idea from those first three levels about whether or not you're gonna like the game. And personally, I mean, if you look at their 3DS titles, obviously are a lot more in depth, but they're also, you know, $40, $50, $60. So if you think about it as, you know, like it's $10 for Super Mario Run, there's a lot of game there for $10. And if you are a mobile game player, the amount of money that you've probably spent in, you know, coins or whatever gold in-game currency it is to, you know, buy that one more turn or, you know, all that kind of stuff, all those little microtransactions, I'm sure that they add up. For games that aren't as good, you've probably racked up more than $10 worth of spending on some of those titles. So
yeah.
I think, we've talked about it before, how it would be great if some of these titles were just available for $10, $15, $20 and just lose microtransactions completely. So there is no way I'm going to fault Nintendo for Super Mario Run and for them charging $10. I think that's for like $10 for a Mario title. Like, yes, please sign me up.
Yeah.
It's a no-brainer for me.
I was just looking, I was pulling out the reviews, and people should never do this when you can tell that a great game like Super Mario Run has like 2 stars. And if you look through it, like it's either people complaining about the cost, which is, I mean, guys, if you want your free-to-play runners, they're out there. But you're not going to get a free-to-play Mario game that has like buy a 99 one-ups or watch this ad for an extra coin. And you're not going to get that because Nintendo isn't interested in making those games. And that's not to say that Nintendo's better than other developers. It's just their choice, their respect of the IP and their style as well. And I think that the main concern, the other concern people have is that you have to be online to play. And, you know, I get that. I totally understand not the anger, but the disappointment behind that design choice. And I'm always on the side of people who are complaining about, you know, wanting an offline mode. Like, there is an offline mode in that game, and it's literally just, it should be the world mode, and you know, you can remove the friend comparisons. If you can still play those world levels and go for the coins offline, that should be enough. Like, I get it, kingdom mode and Toad Rally requires an internet connection, but to be able to progress your save via world mode offline, that would be an ideal situation. But people who are like lambasting the reviews, giving them 1-star, 2-star for a $14 in-app purchase, I mean, go elsewhere. Like, it's a fun game and you want to play more of it, you purchase it, right? Like, that's that's how consumerism works. That's how buying products works. And you wouldn't go to EB Games and say, I want to buy this Super Mario game, but I don't want to pay $40. You know, like, best case scenario, you could buy it used for $35 and, you know, it's got some toddler snot all over it. But I mean, because that's how I feel used games work. That's how the used market works. That's how they get. Yeah, I mean, I don't know. Like, you shouldn't expect like a top tier product to be free, like with no benefit to the developers. Like, that doesn't make any sense. Yeah. And there are some free to play options out there that, you know, that benefit the developer and also give you a free experience. But like, I can only mute my phone so many times while I watch another ad for some shitty Christmas themed Candy Crush game. Like, I can't do it anymore. I've seen them enough. So
So overall, I think Ryan and I both recommend Super Mario Run, and you should look for that coming to Androids in January. I wanted to take a second and thank our new patron, Anna. Thank you so much for supporting the show. If you want to be just like Anna and be amazing, you can head on over to patreon.com/thegamersin. We're going to be making some updates, and our new Patreon goals and rewards should be live next week. So make sure you check that out if you liked Game Night. You can also remember to join us over on our Discord. That information is available over on... does this work?
It
does. Bit.ly link?
Yeah, it
Excellent.
Does.
Excellent. If you want to join in on our Discord conversations, you can do so at bit.ly/TGI Discord. Our topic of the week this week, we're going to talk about our most anticipated titles of 2017. So, obviously, we have, you know, the big ones, RDR2, Horizon Zero Dawn, Zelda, Mass Effect, and obviously South Park. But we're going to kind of steer away from a lot of those titles, and we're going to talk about the ones that we're anticipating that you may or may not have actually heard of. So, we thought we've talked the other ones almost to death. So it was time to kind of branch out a bit. So it's this is just completely randomly happened like this, but Ryan and I don't actually have two of the same title. I put all mine in here, and then I was like, okay, I'm going to get rid of the duplicates. There are no duplicates. Okay.
Another varied year at the end coming at you.
It's so funny because, I mean, we generally have different tastes in games, but there's obviously some crossover, like in all the titles I just mentioned. But it seems like for some of the smaller titles, we get really excited and pulled in by different stuff. I guess We Happy Few is probably the most recent example I can think of a title that, like, I was super excited about, and Ryan was like, oh, this looks kind of cool, and I'm like, no, but it's, like, perfect, it has, like, all the cool things from all the different things that I love, and Ryan's just like, meh. I'm like, what? What's wrong with you?
It's a survival game. I don't want another one of those.
So we actually have, we've pulled a few different ones in here, and I guess we should just jump right in. Ryan, do you want to start with your first one? Although, I think this is probably the most obvious of all of them.
So Halo Wars 2 is a game coming out early February, or late February rather. I did not know it was coming out so soon. They had a beta a while ago, pretty rough, but it must have been I hope it's a pretty early beta. This was like back E3 time, so yeah. a while ago. And it's a game that's a sequel for a game that probably didn't need or warrant or kind of produce enough to earn a sequel, but it's nice to see Microsoft going back to this well, and it's Halo Wars 2. We're probably not going to get another Halo game for another year, so this is a good stopgap. It's an RTS, it's on consoles, and actually for the first time launching on PC alongside, so you'll be able to play your console RTS on a PC with a keyboard and mouse, which is nice. And it's being made by Creative Assembly, which are the guys behind Total War, like Total War Rome and...
Oh, yeah, okay.
Yeah, so it looks really cool, and I like the Halo side stories. I feel like that's when they get the most creative, and they're not like, how do we make the Master Chief go after the bad guy this time? I don't know. Throw some weird skull things at him. Okay. They kind of go back to the good old like Covenant problems, which is, you know, familiar territory, but still a lot of fun. So I'm cautiously optimistic about it because I think I would like to try it on PC because it's been a long time since we've had an RTS kind of grace our gaming time. Last one would have been Legacy of the Void, right?
Yeah, StarCraft. Yeah, definitely. So for me, the first one I'm going to talk about is it's really, 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 really quickly because we've talked about it before on the show and we've also played a lot of the kind of no-name version of it, I guess, but Friday the 13th is coming early 2017, and this is basically Dead by Daylight, but with the Friday the 13th, Jason... Friday the 13th is Jason, right?
Yes, yeah.
Yeah. So, basically, Jason's the killer, but I feel like... So, Dead by Daylight is multiplayer only, and I think... excuse me, Friday the 13th has a single player, I believe.
They recently announced that they will be having a single player. I think that's why it got delayed, because it was supposed to come out this year. Which, honestly, I'm excited that they're adding a single player. Like, I like Dead by Daylight, but something about Jason kind of, I don't know, it would be fun to have a single player mode, because Jason's not necessarily like a narrative like movies franchise, but it's certainly one that, coming from the movies, you would like to play through it and kill some camp counselors. I mean, come on, who wouldn't want
it? I always get him confused with Mike Myers,
right,
from Halloween. So I get Friday the 13th and Halloween, because they're both kind of like dates, so I get those two confused in my head all the time, and which bad guy goes with which movie about a date. But yeah, so I keep thinking Mike Myers with the weird mask and the, yeah, and but no, this is Jason who's the camp guy.
And the cool thing about Friday the 13th and this game and kind of where this franchise came from is that Friday the 13th, while kind of lumped in with Halloween, I don't think they really had much play against each other. They were total separate things, but mm-hmm. Friday the 13th did kind of gel with Freddy. Nightmare on Elm Street.
I remember the Freddy versus Jason movies.
Yeah, and I want to see that happen. If we're getting single player content, it'd be cool to have an expansion that's Freddy versus Jason. That'd be really cool.
Mm-hmm. So basically, I really, really enjoyed the gameplay of Dead by Daylight. I liked the idea of either, you know, being your friends trying to escape a person-controlled killer, or the other way around, being the one stalking your friends. Like, we had some really, really fun game nights. So Friday the 13th, I'm really excited about, because Dead by Daylight was so successful in terms of our gaming experiences. So I can't wait for Friday the 13th. But the other one, another one that I'm looking forward to, that I literally hadn't even heard of until we found this list from Polygon with, like, I don't know, what is it, like 50 titles or something like that?
There's a lot of fluff on there.
There's a lot of kind of extra ones, and I'm probably going to totally butcher the name of this, but it's called The Sexy Brutale. It's like brutal, but with an E on the end. So I'm thoroughly confused. But it's, first of all, a murder mystery. So yay. Nice. Second of all, it's a Groundhog Day style game, which makes me think of Majora's Mask, which is amazing. And then third, it's set in a Downton Abbey type mansion. So yes, yes, and yes, please.
Oh, neat. It kind of looks a little bit like Bastion, doesn't it?
It has that kind of perspective and that kind of art style. It's actually, considering the description of the game, it's very bright for what I would kind of be expecting, but I'm excited about it. It comes early 2017 title, and I mean you've got dates for your games. I don't have dates for my games.
coming soon. Yeah, it looks interesting, and honestly, like, I'm a big fan of indie titles, and I once you put that on your list, I went and checked out the trailer. The teaser trailer doesn't even show gameplay. Is there like one screenshot and one teaser? But the teaser is very dark. Yeah.
But yeah, so I'm really excited about that one, because growing up, I loved like true crime, like Max Haynes, like all the kind of like just true crime and murder mysteries. I liked Agatha Christie and obviously Stephen King. I'm a huge Stephen King fan. So just like all this kind of like murder, horror, mystery type. It's just right up my alley. So I'm excited about this one.
Cool.
So what's your next title?
So this one's we're going to go super Japanese here. It's called Nier Automata. And it's actually a sequel to a game I played. I went through a phase called unemployment. and it was right after university, but before I had a job. And their Blockbuster had this this Game Pass where you could go rent a game. It was $30 a month. And you could basically walk in, pick a game off the shelf, walk out, and return it anytime. And it was, I think it was the undoing of Blockbuster, basically. But I went in, I would pick up games.
It's so funny, because while you were doing this, at literally like the exact same time, I was like binge watching Lost.
Right.
That was my unemployment activity.
That was your unemployment. Okay. Yeah. Well, we joke, and obviously, like, people who are actually struggling with unemployment, we feel for you. But the joke is basically like I would just play these games and, you know, kind of look for jobs. Nier was this weird Japanese RPG that I'm like, yeah, I'll give it a shot. And it kind of like grabbed hold of me. It's a weird nonsensical story about like this dude with no shirt on who had a book that talked, and Liam O'Brien was in it. It sounds like I'm describing a weird dream that I shouldn't repeat publicly, but Anyways, there's a demo on PS4 that you can download for Nier Automata, and it's actually made by the Platinum Games guys. And it basically plays not at all like how I remember Nier playing. It's very much like Bayonetta, a very action-oriented shooter, combat, slash and move type game. It's a lot of fun, and actually coming out a couple days before my birthday, so that's fantastic. Nice. And yeah, it's really cool, and if you like Bayonetta and you like Japanese games, like it's very action oriented and worth checking out. The demo is available now, and I think it'll just be available for the foreseeable future. It's totally worth playing. Check it out for sure.
The next one that I'm looking forward to is called Outlast 2. So if you guys are familiar with, I guess, not this past Extra Life, but the Extra Life before, I think you played some Outlast. And
yeah, why would
I
you remember, put this on your list? That's not...
Well, and see, this is the thing. So the Outlast that you played looked to me like it was just this, like you were in an old, like, medical insane asylum type facility, and you were, like, trapped in this building with these monster things, and it was really, really scary and not something I was interested in playing. True. But watching you play was really, really funny.
Of course.
But it's not something that would ever really pull me in. But Outlast 2, it's basically this, like, rural, like, small town with, like, crazy religious overtones to it, and you're trying to, like, unravel this greater story. You're like an investigative reporter, which I feel like you were a reporter in the first one too, weren't you?
Yeah,
so it's still got that same core, like, reporter kind of thing, and so you're basically trying to, like, sneak around and gather evidence. And the reason why I feel like I'll enjoy Outlast 2 where I wouldn't enjoy Outlast, and this is why I think it's worth mentioning, is it sounds like it's more of a, just like, maybe not an open world is the wrong word for it, but just an open experience in general. Like, I feel like trapped in a building is just another level of scary, and that makes horror games that I don't want to play. But if I have some element of outside, which is also why I think I enjoy Dead by Daylight, is because a lot of the times when you're running away, like, there are borders to the area that you're in, but they're not, like, closed in walls. Like, I feel like there's almost a level of, like, claustrophobia that I get in horror games when I'm like walking through corridors or in and out of rooms, or even in Gone Home, when you're not really sure what's happening, but you have to, like, walk through this, all these different rooms of this giant old house. Like, that kind of, it just makes me that extra little bit of anxious. But I feel like exploring a town where you have to kind of stay hidden and discreet because you're trying to gather evidence and you're investigating, I think it's murders or something. Like, there's some reason that you're there. Right. And it's like the whole town is against you, but the whole town isn't necessarily, like, they're monsters of a different kind, I guess, if that makes sense. Like, they're evil people as opposed to, like, evil mutated monsters.
Yeah.
So it appeals to me a little bit more, I think, than Outlast 1 would have.
I could certainly feel that, because I think Outlast 1 was more about survival as opposed to journalism integrity. It sounds like you're describing, like, no, it's not about survival. It's about
journalism.
There it is. Thank you. I set you up, and I didn't even have to follow up. You ran with it, and I love it. It looks like a lot of fun, and also a game made not far from here. I just did a Montreal as well, which is nice, and it's a small team of people wronged by Ubisoft, which is most small studios in Montreal. So it's really cool.
Yeah, and I feel like Outlast is a title that a lot of gamers really enjoyed, and I just missed out on because of the style of it. But I feel like I'll be able to experience Outlast, I'll be able to see what the franchise is like without that, you know, kind of constant, anxious, claustrophobic kind of feeling. So I'm looking forward to Outlast 2 for sure.
Yeah, I can feel you.
So what about you? Have a kind of polar opposite of that.
Yeah.
with your next title. I'm like, Outlast 2. You're like, this super fun, like, yay, colorful game.
Yeah, so I will, you know, a little bit of a spoiler here. We have, like, zero Nintendo titles on this list, minus the Zelda mention. But that's basically because we have no idea what Nintendo's doing.
Yeah, no one knows what Nintendo's doing. We're hoping that Zelda actually comes out with the Switch, but who really knows? And we've talked Zelda to death, so Nintendo doesn't get a spot on our anticipated list this year.
I'm sure January will bring plenty of episodes where we talk about Nintendo. More on that later. But Yooka-Laylee is a game that was Kickstarted, and it's actually made by Nintendo faithfuls, folks, ex-Rare folks, who worked on a lot of the Banjo-Kazooie games. And Yooka-Laylee, if you watch a trailer, it's pretty much as Banjo-Kazooie can be without getting sued by Microsoft. Like, I was watching it.
That was like, I was looking at it and I was just like, oh my god, like, how are they getting away with this? They just like changed the names and changed the character styling a little.
Yeah, and when you say a little, like, literally when they do like the quote unquote Nintendo butt stomp, where the characters like use their butts for something, which honestly, you should never do that. That's how you break tailbones, people. You know, the butt stomp is like, that is literally the moveset that Banjo and Kazooie does, where they, and even the sounds too. And the music is like ripped right out of a Nintendo or even just any Banjo Kazooie game. And but that's why I'm kind of excited for it, because we haven't had a mainline Banjo Kazooie in, gosh, 10 years. Like, it's been a long time. And I mean, if you want to count Nuts and Bolts, it's still been a long time. And I love Nuts and Bolts, but yeah, Yooka-Laylee is actually launching in March, or no, April, rather. There is an actual date out there now, but PS4, Xbox One, and PC, and soon the Switch. They actually dropped Wii U support in favor of the Switch, which is nice, because the Wii U is dead. Let's all be honest. Even Nintendo knows that.
Poor Wii U.
I realized I have not played my Wii U since, like, Twilight Princess, which was almost a year ago. But
that really a year ago? Oh my god.
I was thinking it was like March, but you know, January's pretty close to March, right?
Yeah. 9 months ago anyways.
Yeah, exactly. But Yooka-Laylee's a lot of fun. It looks really cool, and I'm looking forward to playing it, cuz honestly, it might end up being like one of the best Nintendo experiences I have next year. And I am looking forward to the Switch, don't get me wrong, but like, it's hard to kind of focus on what Nintendo's trying to do when we have literally no idea, besides Zelda. Mm-hmm. And like you said, we don't know if Zelda's coming out in March. So this is coming out shortly after March. So
excellent. I have a couple of little kind of indie titles that I wanted to talk to you guys about, especially the first one here, which is called What Remains of Edith Finch. Is very much like a kind of a Life is Strange little whole bunch of stories strung together. So it's basically the story of a cursed family, and you experience it in first person view, and you kind of like move your way through family members to experience the whole story. So it's more of an art piece, I think, than a video game per se, but in the vein of kind of Life is Strange stuff. And it looks really, really cool. Again, like, I love these, like, and actually this one and one other one that I'm going to talk about are kind of more like historical type based themed things. Even the other one I talked about, the sexy whatever earlier on.
The sexy whatever.
Brutale, whatever.
It's French. It's brutale.
where I was talking about the whole like Downton Abbey style, like just that whole, I'm watching The Crown right now, so I'm just in a very like early 1900s like mindset right now. And so this whole idea of like moving through family members and experiencing the story of a family over the course of a century is really interesting to me. So I'm looking forward to that one. I'm also looking forward to one that looks very Tim Burton-esque, which I absolutely love Tim Burton, and everything that he's ever touched is amazing. It's called Little Nightmares, and the only thing that kind of like makes me go, I don't know if I'm gonna like this, is basically it's the story of a kidnapped little girl, which kind of is a little off-putting, but
basically she was kidnapped. It's like, she fell down a well. It was like Alice in Wonderland kind of thing, but now that I know she's kidnapped, it's a little dark.
It is. It's very dark. So basically, it's like everything in the game, like in terms of aesthetics, looks very Tim Burton. It's all very like exaggerated, the way he tends to exaggerate his character design. And so I'm looking forward to it. And it's like a side scrolling. So that's kind of cool. But it's very much like Inside in that way, I think, where it's like a side scrolling stand in certain places to get past the puzzle kind of a game. Mm-hmm. Which is kind of funny because I wasn't in love with Inside like everyone else was, but I feel like the kind of Tim Burton feel and the Tim Burton aesthetic of Little Nightmares might keep me in it longer.
It's one of those games that has an art style that looks real. And not because it's like photorealism, but because they're going for that puppet look.
I was going to say, yeah, they look like puppety, claymation-y kind of like materials. Like it looks like you can, if you were to touch it, you would know exactly how it would feel, if that makes sense. Like it has a very tactile look to it.
Yeah, and the last game that sort of did that really well was The Swapper, which was actually rotoscoped actual models. And it wouldn't surprise me if this is what they've done. They've actually made models of these characters and animated them in a way, because even the way they move looks rotoscoped. It's super cool, and honestly could just be really good art design, similar to how they did with the South Park games, where like you would swear they are making like cardboard cutouts of these characters and having them waddle around. But it's interesting. And hello, dog. Evidently the on air button wasn't going on. Can you get the dog out of here? Thank you.
Hopefully your new studio in your new house will have a big on-air sign that lights up above your door.
I'm going to add that to my request, and then I also added to the request, teach dog to obey on-air sign. But no, these two titles that you mentioned, it's funny because they're right up my alley. And I totally passed over them because there's so many of these types of games coming out these days. But Little Nightmares looks like it'll give me big nightmares. That type, like the Tim Burton type stuff, when I was a kid, gave me nightmares. Like, I could not watch Nightmare Before Christmas when I was a kid. It would just...
Really?
It creep me out, man. All that, like, weird, like, squirmy shit.
Ugh. Yeah.
Ugh. Come on.
Squirmy shit's the best.
Not really.
Speaking of squirmy shit, State of Decay 2, is that zombie stuff?
It's zombie stuff. And one could hope State of Decay 2 is less of a... I don't want to call it a hot mess, but less of a... that's super rude of me. State of Decay wasn't a hot mess, but it like came in hot. Like it was an indie game with big ambitions, and it had a fun gameplay loop, but occasionally like things would just go awry and game systems would just fall apart. And but State of Decay 2 looks like a lot of fun, and honestly, if they can like really tighten up those animation styles, because it was very, you know, we talk about Little Nightmares having a very like rotoscoped, very cool looking animation style. State of Decay had some real problems with stiff animations, and if they can tighten that up in the sequel and kind of make it feel more like a polished product as opposed to like it was an XBLA game when it came out, right? Because it was originally in a 360 title. So it's interesting that they're coming out with a sequel this year, and honestly one of the few zombie games that's coming out that isn't going to be complete garbage, because there's a lot of zombie content that comes out that's not so hot. So I'm looking forward to it, because it's like, it's the first one was this open world build your zombie survival community, like go out, collect supplies. It was one of the only zombie games I can remember where you're actually foraging for the supplies and using those supplies to manage a community. And as the story progressed, you would actually move your community physically from one location to the other, actually making the pilgrimage with cars that you've found off the side of the road and like scavenged gas and stuff. So it's literally the Walking Dead episodes that are my most favorite, where they're just trying to survive off the land as opposed to just dealing with psycho people. Like the game has that too, but it's most fun when you're just scavenging for supplies and
that whole scavenger thing is why you liked Last of Us so much, right? That whole idea of scavenging to survive.
Exactly, yeah. And then that's my favorite moments of that game, and like State of Decay would sometimes fall apart when you're suddenly surrounded by just evil people, and it's like, well, I guess I gotta shoot my way out of this, as opposed to when you're actually fighting zombies, you have to be strategic. And in State of Decay they had these like hordes that would come through, and you would have to, like, most of the time you just run through them with your car, which was super fun. You know, other times it's like, okay, I have to clear this house of these infected, and, you know, you can't, unfortunately, run your car through the house because that would kind of damage the supplies inside. you had to do it strategically, and that was a lot of fun and really cool. And there was consequences. Like, if your character died, that character was dead, and then you had to play as someone else in the community. Like, you didn't play a character, you played a person. Real weight there, and I want to see it, you know, done, you know, a second time with more polish and more attention. That would be really good. So, yeah, zombies.
Yep, zombies.
Not really surprised.
Well, I feel like, you know, you get your typical, like, this is the zombie game that Ryan's sure. excited for. And then I get my typical, this is my cool fantasy dragon thing that I'm looking forward to this year. Because that is what my next title is Scalebound. So this is something that we've seen since literally 2014, which feels like so long ago because it was shown off at E3. And it just, I feel like I've been waiting for this forever, and it was very much supposed to be like flagship kind of titles for the Xbox One. And then, so we also saw it with Quantum Break, which Quantum Break came out this past, I guess, was it April? We realized. Anyways, early in 2016, we got Quantum Break. And so now 2017, we don't have an actual release date. We're supposed to get Scalebound. But the idea is basically you are one of, I think, three classes and you get to have a dragon friend. So, I mean, like, yes, please.
And it's a literal dragon companion, and there's cool multiplayer. And it's like there are eight characters on screen at once as you and your dragon are fighting. I remember E3 pretty clearly this year, where there was that trailer where you and three of your friends on their dragons were fighting this giant monster.
Fighting the boss, yeah.
And
oh,
like,
that was so cool.
Just, it looked like what I want to see in MMOs, where it's a joint effort to take down this boss, but the combat is real time and not sort of like, you know, math based and role based. It's you hitting that character and connecting and. I mean, yeah, it looks really fun. And again, made by a developer that we've already mentioned on the show, Platinum. They make some great games and they make some crap games, but I feel like Nier and Scalebound are two games that they're made by their A teams, and it's going to nail it. This isn't a Star Fox Zero we're talking about. This looks like a really good game.
Yeah, so, and I don't think that we've had any official, like, delays, because I don't think that we ever actually had set release dates for this. I think, you know, 2017 is the closest we've ever had to like a set date, but it feels like we've been waiting for this one forever, so that's why it makes my most anticipated list. But Ryan, why don't you talk about your last one, Tacoma?
Yeah, so Tacoma, I don't know a whole lot about this game, but I know it's made by the folks that made Gone Home, and it's based in space on a derelict space station, so I'm all in. it sounds like something I would really enjoy, and I've been digging these narrative games, these quote unquote walking simulators, a little more these days. And I want to see what Fulbright does next. And I really liked Gone Home, so I want to see what they do with Tacoma.
Honestly, I saw this one, and I saw the, you know, makers of Gone Home, and we both really enjoyed Gone Home, both the experience of playing through and the story that they were telling in the end. The only thing that really threw me off of Tacoma and, you know, caring about it and wanting to play it and seeing what the story is the art style. It's freaking weird. It's the same reason that I never played, and a lot of people are saying it's, you know, one of the top 10 games of 2016, but Superhot. Because to me, I'm looking at these games and they look unfinished. They look like their main characters are like placeholders. And I'm just like, I can't get past this art style, and it's so weird because, and there's no explanation obviously in the screenshots, but it's like the whole rest of the world in Tacoma is fleshed out, but then you've got these like weird see-through, but they have like stickman skeletons. Like it's even difficult to describe the art style because it doesn't even seem like a style. It seems like placeholders for actual people. So that it throws me right off the game because it just makes it so it's so much less immersive for me. And it may be because Gone Home was such a great narrative experience. It may be that the design decision, the art style is explained. Like maybe they are holograms of, you know, events that happened in the past or something. Like maybe you're watching a meeting and so the people aren't actually in front of you, but these are, you know, projections or something. Because so, like you said, it's based in space, right? So it's
So they are
it's futuristic, but
Yeah.
It just, it's a weird choice and I don't like it.
No, I can feel you. And, it is, they are actually, so you're on this space station, you're trying to figure out why it's now abandoned. And those are like holograms being played by the computer. It is still not the art choice I would have gone with for that sort of thing. Like, we've seen those, clearly that isn't a person, clearly it's a hologram, but have it still look like Star Wars. Probably is the first one that did it where it's just like literally the person, but they've added like this,
but
like
weird
blue
filter. But they're all blue and it's, yeah, exactly. Yeah, it's kind of stuttering in and out. But
I would have preferred that a lot better than what appears to be like a gray head on top of a, like you said, colored, a skeleton.
Yeah.
But then like their skin is just this color blob and they appear to have symbols on them. Maybe that's to dictate like what they did or what,
yeah, what, yeah, their role was. Yeah, I don't know, but
I can feel
it,
you there.
I mean,
yeah,
it could be good. It's just it's a weird artistic choice and it kind of made me go meh and skip over it on my list. Otherwise, you're right, the whole developer of Gone Home and space and unraveling a mystery, like I mentioned earlier, mysteries are right up my alley. I love those kind of stories and trying to figure out what happens, if they're well written, because if I could figure it out too early then I don't like it. But Tacoma, I mean, I was guessing all the way until the very end of Gone Home as to what actually happened to her family and to her sister. So I feel like it was a really interesting experience and it was really fun. And I want to know what the developer is capable of, but that art style just kind of made me go, huh.
Yeah, for sure.
So, but the art style that I do absolutely love and why this next game made it onto my list, it's my final title. It's called Vampire, but spelt with a Y.
Ooh, fancy.
And it's coming sometime in 2017. And like I mentioned, I'm in a very kind of like early 1900s sort of a like place right now. And so this actually takes place in like Edwardian London. I'm not 100% sure when exactly that is, but I think it's kind of like steampunky kind of time, like industrial revolution age, so a little bit earlier than early 1900s. But anyways, that kind of era of London. I love stories based in London and Paris anyways, because I'm just a huge sucker for Europe. But basically, you play as a doctor who's turned into a vampire, but there's a flu epidemic going around. So you have to basically walk around London and interview people and try to figure out whether they're okay to eat it, like if people are going to notice if they're missing. So there's that level of it. But then there's also another level of, is their blood okay for you to feed on, because everyone's infected? So you have to kind of like sniff them out basically and find someone with like good enough quality blood but who also won't be missed, and then you have to stay alive, right? So you have to like kind of hand pick all of your victims and stuff, and you can like, yeah, so it's a kind of like a sneaky investigate type of a game, along with the fact that I love vampire stuff in general, except Twilight, that was dumb, but vampire stuff in general is really cool. So
yeah,
I love the kind of like European vampire story. So
and this is by the guys who did Life is Strange, which
yes,
you know, if they learn anything from, and I don't think it's an episodic game, or at least
no,
that hasn't been unveiled, so that's good. So maybe they won't run into the same issues we had with Life is Strange, but yeah, no, I agree. And finally, we're gonna get a vampire game that doesn't suck, or well, a recent vampire game that
okay. Vampires,
right?
So they suck blood. Get
it's true. I like the mechanic of your, you know, it's not the GTA mechanic where it's like, oh no, I'm running low on health, let me just suck this random person's blood. Like, you have to actually think about what you're doing, and it's a little more strategic. So that sounds a lot less chaos and more, you know, thought processy and you know, cool.
It's like a giant open world like puzzle sort of thing. So I'm looking forward to it. I think cool. It could be really cool. And like you said, it's from the developers of Life is Strange, which we in the end we did enjoy, even though I was sick of episodic stuff by the time we got to Life is Strange, but it was still it was an interesting story anyways. So I'm looking forward to seeing what they're doing with this, and I from the sounds of it, the mechanics are really cool. So I want to just get into that world, get into London and suck some blood. Exactly. In 2017.
Yeah, sounds great.
I think that's going to do it for us tonight on the show. Wanted to remind everybody, you can go to etched.amove.tv or shirts.amove.tv if you want the logos from your favorite podcasts on some swag. So we've got, you know, beer mugs, we've got wine glasses, we have coffee mugs, as well as t-shirts. There's shirts and mugs from all of your favorite AMOVE shows, like Into the Nexus, Angry Chicken, and of course, The Gamers Inn. So make sure you guys go and check those out. So we wanted to let everybody know that we are not going to be doing a show next week, which is January 11th. Mm-hmm. We are going to be doing a special. I wrote it all down, so I have to read this. We're going to do a special on January 13th because there is a Switch event on the 12th, like really late at night at like 11 p.m. or something.
Yeah.
So we're going to cover that. So we're going to do a special on next Friday instead of next Wednesday. Mm-hmm. And then we're also going to do a super special episode on February 1st. Ryan and I are lucky enough to be going to a Nintendo event in Toronto, and we are going to get our hands on the Switch on January 28th.
That's exciting.
So February 1st, we will be doing an episode all about the Nintendo Switch and our first impressions. So I'm really excited.
We might get to play Zelda. I know you're skeptical. But
I am poo-pooing the idea of us playing Zelda because I feel like, maybe they'll have a little tiny, like, 20-minute gameplay demo, the same one that they've been showing off for the last two years.
But you get to play it. Like,
I guess that's true. I guess technically then we will be playing Zelda, but I mean, I don't know. After that rumor that they didn't quash, saying that it wasn't going to be available for release of the Switch, I feel like Nintendo is just toying with my emotions, and we're not going to see Zelda till like November. So,
well, the thing is, there is official marketing out there in stores for the Switch that has Zelda on it. That would feel like a pretty terrible bait and switch.
Not to remind people that this is where you're going to get the next Zelda title. Just because there's Zelda on the advertisements doesn't mean that there's going to be Zelda on launch day.
I could see them.
I am super pessimistic now.
All right. Well, I can understand that. But, you know, I'd even be happy to go to this Switch event. I still want to get my hands on the Switch, but I would be happy to go to the Switch event and even see someone else play Zelda, like in person. Just I want to make sure that game exists because I am skeptical.
You kind of don't believe it, eh? I feel the same way. I feel like they've got these like little chunks of gameplay that's like pre-recorded, but the game doesn't actually exist.
Yeah, but I mean, honestly, like we know Zelda. I'm more looking forward to, and again, we'll know most of the stuff that we'll actually probably know everything we're gonna get to experience on the 28th. On the 12th when they do that unveil. So like, that's why I think it was important to kind of move the show to Friday so we could give our, you know, impressions, because they're dropping everything. Like, this is launch details. So we're going to be getting everything we've been waiting a long ass time for. Thank you, Nintendo, for making us wait. You bunch of butts.
I hope you're right. I hope we get launch day Zelda, but I don't know. I'm not going to hold my breath. I'm going to be super pessimistic.
It's fine. We'll see. What? I think that's a solid strategy because...
Then I can't be disappointed on the 12th when they tell me it's not coming till November.
What if it was coming out in June? Like, but I feel like if they're going to delay it, it's going to come out in November. I think you're right on that aspect.
Poor Ryan, you could see his shoulders just like dropping.
I just really want to play a new Zelda, guys. I was talking to someone at this about this, and they're like, yeah, the last Zelda game I played that was really good was like Majora's Mask. And I'm like, ah, you're right. Like, there hasn't been like this really good Zelda where people can't like get it. Like, he played Twilight Princess and he's like, I don't know, I don't like playing as a dog. It was weird. It's like, I kind of get that.
Twilight Princess was, as much as I like Dark Zelda as opposed to like light and fluffy Wind Waker Zelda, Twilight Princess was definitely a little out there. Midna was weird too.
So hopefully this is getting back to anyways, Nintendo. We're gonna, like I said, we're gonna talk a lot about Nintendo in January, so no need to get it over with now.
Yeah, get ready for that, guys. So, again, no show next Wednesday, January 11th. We will be recording on Friday, January 13th instead. And you can look for our special Nintendo episode on February 1st after we get some hands-on time with the Switch. That's going to do it for us tonight. You can visit us on the web at gamersinpodcast.com. You can also find us on AMOVE TV along with other fabulous podcasts, including The Angry Nerd, Into the Nexus, Overwatchers, The Angry Chicken, and For Azeroth. You can follow us on Twitter. You can find me, Jocelyn, at JossPlays. Brian is at R. Murphy, and don't forget to follow the show at The Gamers Inn. The video versions of all our episodes can be found on our YouTube channel, which is youtube.com/amotv. You can also find the show on Facebook and Google+. If you'd like to email the show and let us know what you are anticipating for 2017, please do so at info@gamersinpodcast.com. Thanks for staying at the Gamers Inn. Remember, tune in next week, except for not next Wednesday, next Friday.
Next Friday.
Bye, guys.